The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. And welcome to the sixth series, in the day-long series of exploring the seven factors of awakening. And if this is the first time you're here, no problem. Everything you need to know will be explained to you and self-contained. And I'm glad you're all taking the time today to be here to practice together. So the sixth factor is samadhi, often translated as concentration, which is not the best translation. I'll say more about that later. But perhaps unification of the mind, calming the mind, settling the mind is a much better translation. So that is the theme we'll be exploring today. As usual, we'll have a break for lunch around 12:30. And today, similar to last time, I think that's what I did also for tranquility, for Pasadi, just to kind of like more practice so that we kind of settle in. Today, there will be some talking and some Q&A, but mostly I like to keep it silent for practicing so that we really get to taste the mind settling and that sense of samadhi, that the mind unifying and collecting. And sometimes with too much talking and interaction, especially during the breaks, that can kind of get a little jiggled. So we're going to support it to settle, so that by the end of the day, there hopefully will be some taste, more than this morning, so that the mind can kind of settle more and more throughout the day to taste the joys, the benefits of samadhi. So that's kind of the outline for today. And there will be times that I will be talking and guided meditations and some Q&A, but not so much, maybe not so many interactive exercises today. We'll see how it goes, what is called for. But maybe more in the morning, less in the afternoon, just more settling. So yeah, more talking in the morning, less in the afternoon. That's kind of like funneling. Funneling might be the best way to go. So actually, there might be some interaction this morning. Anyway, so with that, what I like to do is to get us started with a guided meditation. So we just all arrive together and settle. And then I'll talk more about this factor. So I'm going to invite you to get more props, if you need more props to be comfortable right now, or a blanket, or whatever it might be. Settling into your body. Feeling your body this morning, feeling your body, the sensations. First of all, just checking in with the body. How are you this morning? Hello, body, how are you this morning? Just checking in. How's the body feeling? Is it heavy? Is it light? Is it creaky this morning and tight? Is there a sense of fatigue or well-restedness? Or a mixture of both. Maybe both are present. Is there a tightness in the body? Or a sense of flow and ease? Whatever it is, don't make it wrong. Just whatever it is, checking in. This is what's happening right now. This is the truth of what's happening right now in this body. Just observing, making space for, befriending. Noticing if there are any places in the body that are especially tight. Maybe there's some pain or special tightness. Also areas of the body where there is ease and flow. Softness. Malleability. And now checking in with the sensations of the body, the touch points, where the body is touching perhaps the cushion or the chair. Not so much noticing or being aware of that touch point from the control tower of the head, but as if your mind is embodied, as if your mind is resting in the contact point between your bottom, your back, and the cushion. And even if does not make sense to you intellectually, just see if you can be that. If you can feel sense from the inside. This contact point with as much felt sense, resting in it, not trying too hard, just resting in this, the sense and the feelings. Of this contact point with curiosity. Maybe also feeling the touch points of the hands with the lap, or if the hands are touching each other. Now I'd like to invite you for us to go through the body systematically and softening and relaxing every part. The mind can settle into samadhi, into unification, when the body is settled and relaxed and spacious. So starting from our feet, our toes. If there's any tightness or tension, softening, letting go. Opening. As if your toes, your feet, were a block of ice melting. Feel them drip, drip, drip. Moving up. To your lower legs. Knees, upper legs. Sense of opening, offering up. Melting. Nothing to hold on to. Just melting, letting the legs melt. No need to tighten or hold on. Letting gravity pull down. And the legs. Moving up to your sit bones, groin area. Relaxing, softening any tension that might be held there. moving up further to your abdomen. Some of us hold a lot of tension in the abdomen, holding our abdomen in. I'd like to invite you to relax, soften, let it hang out actually physically. Moving further up, to the chest and upper back, feeling both the heaviness and the lightness of letting go. You can both feel heavy, letting gravity hold, and it can feel light when you're not holding with tension, when you let go of any tightness. You can feel light. Moving to our neck and shoulders, softening, letting go of the shoulders. Noticing if you're holding them up with any tension. Relaxing, softening the arms and the hands. Again, with the hands, you can let them feel heavy. Completely giving up their weight to gravity. Feeling the heaviness as they relax. They can also feel light as they feel unwrapped, the layers, levels of tension and holding are opened up. They can feel light like a helium balloon, or both at the same time. Exploring, moving further up from the hands up to the arms, neck and shoulders, up to the head. Feeling your jaw soften and relax. Maybe even fall open a bit. Your tongue resting. Your whole face. Your cheeks. Hanging down. Offered up to gravity, melting. Your forehead. Soft. No need to tighten your brow. Inviting your face to be as soft, relaxed, as possible. Letting your eyes rest in their socket. Softening, relaxing the muscles of the face. Relaxing the whole body. There's no doing to be done right now. There's no work. It's just relaxing the body, the face, as much as possible. Sitting with complete relaxation. That is the invitation. That is how we till the soil for samadhi. While you are sitting, exploring, relaxing the body, I'm going to ask you to do something which you may have never been asked to do. And this might give you a lot of information about your practice and where you need to relax. I'm going to ask you to lift fingers and touch the middle bit in between your brow. And if you feel any tightness there while you are sitting in this meditation, know that you're working too hard, you're trying too hard, you're focusing too hard. So lift your fingers and touch in between your brow to see if you feel any ridges, any tightness between your eyebrows. If you're kind of focusing, tightening the muscles there, there's a lot of information there. If you noticed any ridges, any creases, or the muscle being a little tight, remember that. Relax, soften those muscles. Try it one more time, feeling the ridges. If there are any, there may not be any. Ah, and how can you relax, soften your forehead, relax your attitude, so there are no creases. There is no tightness. So, in order to cultivate, in order to invite the mind to settle, and to come forward if you wish, join the circle, to cultivate, to till the soil for the mind to settle into samadhi, the body being relaxed, completely relaxed, is really, really important. Really important. Because samadhi is not a work that we do like with tightness. And the more actually relaxed you are in a stance of receiving, the more the mind tends to get calm and happy and stable. It's like a child. You know, when the child actually this is interesting. I don't know if you've ever seen a newborn be really hungry and screaming for food. Their fists are tight like this. And notice after they get their mother's milk, the fists open. They completely relax in satiation. Right? That feeling of body relaxing in satiation. Ah, that's kind of the feeling of contentment, of satiation, of ease in the body. That's the precursor to samadhi. Though it's often, I would say, mistranslated as concentration, because concentration in the Western lexical container, it kind of, we think of concentrate, and the first thing I think about concentrating, my brow gets really tight, I'm concentrating, really like, concentrating. And that's really not what samadhi is. Samadhi is really more unification. The mind settles on its own. It gets concentrated, right? It's like, think of concentration as a concentric circle. It's like, it kind of gets gathered. The mind gets gathered. Think of concentration that way, not in like, I'm concentrating, as if it's a math problem. I really need to think hard about it and drill down. So that's something really important about concentration. And years ago, it was quite enlightening for me early in my practice, where I was sitting and thinking, okay, I'm really relaxed, I'm not working too hard. And then I raised my hand and touched between my forehead, and it was really tight. I was like, whoa, I'm not quite aware of how tight, how hard I'm trying to concentrate, in quotes, right? And I was actually getting headaches at the time meditating, because I was working so hard, like, but I wasn't aware, I wasn't quite connecting. So this invitation that I just gave you to feel, because I look around sometimes, I see people, you know, relax, and I see sometimes, you know, there's tightness, there's clearly tension, and I'm wondering if you have done this thing I did, like, oh wow, look at that, check that out, there is tightness here. Not just the muscle gets tight, but also, you know, there's creases here. So whenever your face is completely relaxed, that's a sign like, oh yeah, you are relaxing. You are softening. You are tilling the soil for samadhi, which I will say a lot more about. But I'm curious if, yeah, please.
So if you prefer the term unification of the mind,
yeah,
unification means disparate things coming together, mm-hmm. or things that are disparate coming together.
Right.
So
right.
In this, if we're going to call it unification of the mind, what is being brought together?
Right. It's it's a good question. I want to get into the translation and etymology of the word in a moment. So how about we hold that for a moment? Okay. So I'll get to that in a moment. But before I get there, I wanted to go along the themes of just this relaxation and noticing your body actually relaxing. So I'm curious if you felt in between your brow, and you did notice, it is tighter than I thought it was. If this gave an insight for you as you just did this practice or not. I'm curious. Anyone? Was that?
It's permanent.
It's permanent. Yours is permanent. Okay, yours is permanent. All right. Anything else? Any other observations? Anyone willing to share? Yeah.
Which? I have permanence, but I forgot.
That's okay. It's all good.
Thank you. Yeah, I have permanence, but no wrinkles permanently.
Uh-huh.
So that's the opposite, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's permanent. Sorry, I didn't quite catch it. I think this is what you were saying.
Well, okay. So I've had surgery where that piece was removed.
I see what you're saying.
So, yeah. So I have permanent smoothness and.
All right. The opposite. I see now what you mean. The opposite. Did anyone notice kind of the muscles get it being a little tight? Tighter than you expected them to be? Yeah. Kind of like a little bit of tightness. Like, I didn't quite expect these muscles to be. Like very, it's very subtle right here. Yeah? It's right here. It's like, the muscles are kind of tightening a little bit more than expected. So that can be a sign for you that you can relax more. You can open up, you can let go. So Any other comments about this before I move on? Anything you might have noticed?
I wasn't just kidding. I feel like it's permanent. I feel like I'm always in my head.
Ah, that's what you meant. Ah.
Yeah. I mean, it is, these lines are permanent too, but yeah, I mean, I feel like there's just always a tightness.
Always a tightness. Got it. I see what you meant now. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's like when the tightness becomes kind of chronic, and there are layers and layers, and it's going to take a while for the muscle to relax. And I'm using the muscle as the mind to relax. This muscle as a placeholder for the whole mind to kind of like to kind of relax a little bit. Yeah. So that's what you're referring to. Thank you. I understand now. Next to you.
For me, it's almost always my left jaw. Like, that's the part I can almost just guarantee. So I think I guess maybe people transfer different parts of their face, but it's always there.
Nice. Nice. I like that. Thank you for that. So basically, for different people, it could be different places also. Like, oh yes, my jaw type. Can I relax some more? For me, sometimes it's the shoulders. It's like I'm holding them tight, like, okay, I can relax. I don't have to concentrate with my shoulders, right? There's no need for that. Yeah, yeah, I appreciate the different parts of the body for different people to realize what part of the body it is for you that's kind of getting tight.
I mean, it's almost like you're chewing on something,
right.
something like that, or you know, like I don't know, what is it? Some comic? What is it? The Snoopy or something? He's always going like that.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think I just do that all the time.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I appreciate that it can be different parts, and I would still say there's something about the middle of the brow between the eyebrows. There is something about this feeling that we kind of like try to look at, we try to do this work, this concentration, this practice, this mindfulness practice with our mind, and we think of our mind being here, and just there's a lot of concentration. So when I teach and teach retreats, looking around, you know, throughout the days as people are getting more settled, really more and more settled in the state of samadhi and spaciousness, I can see actually their brows open more and more. So I've seen that as a correlation of actually really learning to relax. And the first step is learning to relax. Don't jumping into trying to concentrate or develop samadhi. Don't even go there. That will come when there is relaxation in the body and a sense of contentment in the body. And there are so many suttas where there is the happiness and delight and sukha and joy. And then the next step is, samadhi. It's born out of all this contentment. The mind settles and quote unquote concentrates. So
may I just
sure,
would
yeah.
you relate that, like I know in the Hindu tradition about the third eye, you know how people talk, so it's like right there with, is there any kind of relation to that, or
yeah,
do you think?
Not directly, not in this tradition. You know, there isn't the chakras or the third eye, and who knows what the relationship is, you know, if one relaxes, you know, I'm sure somebody has tried to map all the traditions to each other, but let's not go that far. Let's just kind of rest in the simplicity of this one for now. Yeah. One more over here.
I think for me, bringing a slight smile to my face.
Yeah.
I relax my face, and I feel like if I'm concentrating too hard and I try and smile, it kind of naturally relaxes that.
Right.
And also, when, you know, in a guided meditation you do, when you, in the middle of the meditation, do a and I kind of go, And I do that, and that helps. You know, I see those are two
the
things.
The famous Nikki's eye.
Yeah. Those two things, I think, bring awareness to that spot. If it is tight, it kind of relaxes when I do that.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think that's a way for me usually, just to kind of let go and check in and really, just, yeah, part of my own practice. That kind of comes out, like, unexpectedly. Okay, here it is. Please.
It felt very relaxed while you were doing that guided meditation, which is a testament to your guided meditation. But throughout the day, sometimes I'll just glance in the mirror and I'll notice when I'm just totally lost in thought, this furled brow.
Yeah.
And it's so furled that when I relax it, it's, you know, there's a lack of blood that's been there and you can see the lines. It's like, oh my goodness, I'm just so unaware. So it's this, as I said, is the antidote to mindfulness. Is the antidote to a being lost in thought. How's that?
Yeah.
For me.
Nice.
Thank you.
Nice. Thank you for that. And what I so appreciate in you sharing that is like, wow, check that out when you check out in the mirror. It's like, it's because I think also what I was relating about my own practice years ago is that I thought I was completely relaxed, yet I was getting these headaches. Like, hey, where are they coming from, right? I'm not tightening my head. Like, oh my goodness. This was on a retreat, so I didn't have a mirror in the meditation hall, but like, oh my goodness. Like, bringing awareness through different tools, because sometimes the mind can't quite touch into it. It's not quite. So the mirror is a great way, or feeling your brow maybe throughout the day, like, oh, here I am again. Ah, can I use other tools to bring in that awareness? Another thing I remember, this is actually a fun one. Years ago, somebody was doing, had created a system on their own computer to take photographs of them, just for them. So it was so that they would look at the photographs, they would look at the video of how they look when they're working at their computer. Oh my God, it was great! It was this little talk, it was part of the quantified self movement, if that makes any sense to you. And they were showing their own photographs. It was so interesting to see. I wonder if there is a product out there right now where we can put it on our computer and just take photos. Like, wow, okay, when I was I was sending this email to this person, oh, look at how I was, you know, my face, or when I was doing this, or it could, maybe a mirror would do it too, if you had a mirror and you could look at yourself frequently. But, yes, please. Mike is coming your way, and you are coming towards the mic.
I have actually two questions.
Yeah, please.
And the first one is about...
Hold it closer, if you would, please. No, just hold it closer. I think, is it on already? Yes, it's on. Yeah.
Okay. Two questions. The first one is that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
So I noticed that when you look with the watching the computer, your iPad or your iPhones, I tended to tense up here.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to relax it. The area.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I don't feel as irritated, because when you get too tired on here, you know, and you feel your eyes tired.
Right.
And my whole body is tired. I don't know how to relax this area.
Yeah.
You know, the second question is that when you are in a state of samadhi, how would you remember to, how do you do that when you're in samadhi? I just wanted to know, because I know that it helps you to relax your body, but when you are in samadhi, you are more concentrated on your breathing, I believe.
Not necessarily. So we'll talk about that a lot more today. I'm just tilling the soil now. This is just preparatory material. We haven't quite got to the juice yet. So... And you're chomping at the bit. Okay, tell us about samadhi. So with the first one, with the, you know, noticing your tightness, I would invite you, like, the same way that I gave the invitation for the whole body to relax. For the whole body to relax. I'm getting then to the head and then forehead. So that's what I would invite you to actually take to your daily life while you're interacting with your iPad and with your computer. See if you can do it from a relaxed state. Make it a practice, right? Your practice doesn't end on your cushion. Practice while you're holding your iPad. Can you relax? Can you be completely relaxed? Is it possible? Maybe yes, maybe no, but make it as a challenge for yourself. Yeah, exactly. And then the second question, like, what is this samadhi? If you're in the state of samadhi, you'll be focused and concentrated on your breath. Can you even breathe? Okay, I'm going to ask you to hold on to that question till the end of the day. Is that okay?
Sure.
Because I think it will answer itself as we go through the day. The answer will reveal itself to you. Okay? Is that cool? Is that okay? Great. And if it's not answered, please ask me again. Will you? Good. Great. Okay. So I would like to move to actually the word samadhi, the translation of it, and what it is, what it's not, and the relationship to it, relationship to the other factors, etc. So, so the word samadhi is derived from the Pali prefix sam, which means together, and the root da, meaning to put or to place. So it's related to the Pali verb sama, samada. Let's try this again. Samadahati, which means to put together, to bring together, to concentrate. So it's a sense of bringing together, like bringing together. So samadhi entails unifying the mind in a steady, undistracted awareness. And this is from Richard Shankman, The Experience of Samadhi, from his book. So the idea of putting together, bringing together, like you're bringing together your mind that is kind of scattered, the monkey mind. What are you bringing together? So that referring back to the question that you were asking earlier. It's a sense of unification. It's a sense of, like when I say unifying, it's more like bringing things together. It's like things that are scattered. And also what it feels like is a sense of cohesiveness. And I think there is some research, might be pretty new and inquit, but you know, there with the brainwaves, there could be this kind of lack of synchronicity, and in the state of samadhi. And I'm going to try to use the word samadhi instead of concentration as much as I can today, because again, concentration, if you think of it as bringing together, to put together, is good, but usually we go to the more familiar translation, which is concentrate, and you think of your head and you're concentrate, which is not helpful. So I'm going to use the word samadhi, to put together, to bring together. So as I was saying, there is also some work about how the various, for example, the EEG channels, they kind of get synchronized. There's this synchronicity. There's just kind of things getting synchronized, being put together, brought together, kind of coherence, more unified. So maybe that's the way I'm thinking of unification. It's kind of things getting calm, getting kind of synced up in a way. And that's kind of what it feels like in the body and mind when there is more samadhi. So there are a few other words that people have used for samadhi, and I'm going to read them, and you might actually find it interesting to maybe close your eyes and let these words wash over you and see what kind of works for you best from these other different translations. So unifying the mind, composed, composure, gathering, collectedness. And let that, by the way, wash over your whole body, not just your head. Samadhi is a whole body experience, by the way. Collectedness, non-distractedness, stabilizing, calming, steady, malleable, stillness, the mind being protected from hindrances and distractions, unification. So reading over these words for you, just to give you a sense of what it might feel, this samadhi, and to say, and I want to emphasize this, it's not this phenomena that is completely out of reach and you've never experienced and you've just come to this day long to figure out what the heck this thing is. No way. You already know what it is. You've already tasted samadhi in different ways in your life. This is not new for you. The same way that all the other factors, all the other six factors of awakening, you know, they sound pretty esoteric, factors of awakening, ta-da! But as we've been talking about them every month, these are factors that are familiar to us in our body, mind, heart, and our psyche. They're already here. And through the practice, we strengthen them, we recognize them, we really figure out their nuances so that they just don't happen by grace. They just show up unannounced. But actually we learn how to cultivate them, how to grow them, how to work with them, how to call on them, so they can show up more in our lives. And the more they show up in our lives, in our body and mind and heart, then the more likely our awakening, our insight, our freedom will be possible. Okay? So let me repeat. So one thing is that we already know what they feel like. We've already had a taste of them, of all of these factors. That's the one thing to keep in mind. The other thing is that through practice, they become better cultivated and more accessible and stronger, really present. We really get it. They get deepened. So if we had kind of dipped into samadhi here and there, oh, we can really cultivate and develop it now. That's another aspect. But it's that actually arrow has two directions. More practice, therefore more of these beautiful seven factors in our lives. It also goes the other way around. More of these factors that show up both in our lives and in our practice, we have more freedom. So it deepens our practice, it deepens our freedom, it deepens our liberation, awakening, nibbana, whatever you want to call it. So they support each other. Does that make sense? The more you practice, the more of the seven, the more of the seven, the more your nibbana, the more you exactly, the deeper your practice. So they kind of like, they support each other. Hence the seven factors of awakening. And the seven factors are beautiful. So let's touch in, given that this is the sixth month of the 7 months, let's touch into the other six for a moment. And the way to think about the seven factors is that One way to think of him is that one leads kind of to another. That's one way to see him. But that's not the only way. So don't just hold it like one leads to another. One supports the other. Maybe that's the better thing. One supports the next. And they all kind of support each other, not just linearly, but kind of horizontally. They all support each other horizontally too. Okay, what do I mean by that? Let's go through the vertical, the linear one first. Okay, and then we'll do the horizontal one. So with the linearly, let's start with the first factor. Anyone remember what the first factor was? Mindfulness, sati. Yes, mindfulness. That's where we begin, becoming aware. That awareness, that simple awareness. Okay. So when the mind is aware, that leads to the second factor, our awakening. Anyone remember what that is? Investigation, exactly. Dhamma vichaya, that sense of curiosity, investigation, when you're mindful of something. Oh, what is this? Oh, this is interesting. Okay. And when those two are present, it gives rise to the third factor, which is energy. Somebody whispered energy. Yes, somebody whispered energy. Very good. So virya, so leads to the third. So more energy comes up. Oh, this is interesting. You know, mind is aware. There's a sense of curiosity, investigation. Oh, now there is more juice. There is more energy, more engagement, more effort. Ah, interesting. Okay. And as those are present, it kind of supports the next factor, the fourth factor, which is joy. Yes, piti. Now joy arises. Ah, the mind is present. It's engaged. It's curious. There is engagement. Like, oh, this is fun. I can just hang out. I can do this for the rest of the day. Right? And you've had these experiences when you've done your hobbies or something you love to do. There's this engagement. Could be gardening. Could be anything. Painting, whatever it might be. Like, oh, there's engagement. There is that sense of being with joy that arises. Okay, so now you have joy. Okay, so the fourth. Now we're getting to the fifth factor. So now what comes up with the fifth? The fifth factor is tranquility. Yes. Or calm or peace. Pasadi. That's another word that's kind of funny to translate. But pasadi, there's this sense of calm. Kind of self-containment. And again, think of the hobby that you like to do. I know some of you like gardening, and some of you like or reading or other. So whatever it is that you like to do. I remember for me, before I started this practice, for me, programming. I loved the intellectual puzzle of programming, and I would be completely like content and curious, and there was energy, and hours would go by. I would never take a break, and it was just the sense of pasadi, this containment, this calm, right? Ah, which gives rise to the next factor, which is the sixth one. Samadhi! When you're absorbed in what you're doing, you're gathered, you're collected, your mind, your body is completely collected in what you're doing, right? There's a sense of unification, calm. So again, I'll bring my nerdy example of doing of programs, like completely focused, completely absorbed. Like people could come and go, and I would even notice what's happening because I was completely absorbed, collected. And you can think of the experiences that you've had in your life. It's something that you've experienced before. It's not so foreign. You've experienced it. And here we're going to be cultivating it more and more and more with respect to practice. And I might as well mention what the seventh one is next week as a preview. All of that leading into the crown jewel of Buddhist practice. Equanimity, yes. Equanimity, the sense of equipoise. Ah, neither falling into nor pushing back from. It's just a sense of stability, equipoise. It's a beautiful, beautiful factor. So what I mentioned just now is kind of a vertical way of like this, when this is there, that's there. But you can also see all of them supporting each other in a horizontal way, right? If when there is more equipoise, there can be more contentment, there can be more stability. There can be more samadhi. There can be, because the mind isn't pushed and pulled by every which way when there is more equipoise. The mind can have more samadhi, right? Or the mind can be more engaged, and there can be more energy, like more smooth energy for practice. So all of them can find ways that they all relate to each other. So, let's see. We've been decisions, what to do now. I'm going to go for maybe taking a break now might be a good idea. There is more I can, because people are already kind of feeling like it's a time for a break, so let's just respect that. Okay, so let's take a break. Let's take a, let's make it spacious, actually. Let's make it a 15-minute break. And what I ask you during this break is to attend to your body, because we're still tilling the soil of relaxing, stretching, and you've been sitting for a while. So stretch your body. If you need to do some yoga, if you want to go for a little tiny walk in the sun, or just like really, what do you need in order to really relax, settle in the body? I'm really going to emphasize relaxation and embodiment today more than any of the other factors, because it's so important for samadhi to be relaxed. If you're tight, samadhi will not show up. If you're relaxed, content, at ease. In fact, do some yoga the next 15 minutes or whatever worked for you physically. All right, so it is 10:40. Let's come back at 10:55. Okay, welcome back. So for our exploration of samadhi today, the way I like to structure it, as you've already figured out, is I think it's much more important to spend some time really understanding and appreciating the preparation and the attitude that's necessary for cultivating samadhi than trying to just do it by like, oh, I want samadhi, how do I do it? I focus on my breath and I just keep on it. Results can vary. I think what is really a lot more important is to really till the soil with the right attitude, right preparation, and then after we've really tilled the soil, when we drop the instructions in of how to be with the breath, then it becomes a lot smoother. How to be with the breath or any other object. There are 40 different objects for cultivating samadhi in Visuddhimagga, in the path of purification. Breath is just one of them. So basically, with that, what I'd like to do is next to talk about the eight principles, the eight Nikki principles for the supporting factors for cultivating stability of mind, for cultivating samadhi. So I like to talk about those and then basically walk you through them, practice with them, and then I'll offer the instructions of what, you know, with the breath. And so that's kind of where we're going for the next hour or so. Okay? All right. So the first supporting factor, first preliminary in this framework, is what we have talked about this morning, is relaxing. is number one, because it's really so, so important. And the mind will not settle into state of samadhi if the body on the cushion is not relaxed. If there's tightness, it will not work. So this actually comes from the Buddha himself in the instructions himself. It is said that when he was sitting under the Bodhi tree the night of his awakening, and he was sitting and practicing so hard and really determined, and not getting anywhere, not really. Awakening was not showing up for him. And then a memory showed up for him, and this is in Majjhima Nikaya 36-31. What the memory that came up for him was a memory of when he was a child, and he was sitting under the cool shade of the rose apple tree. And as a child, he was left under this cool shade, and the grown-ups are in the field and doing something and working. And he remembers that there was this sense of joy, ease, calm. And he was so content. He was so happy and relaxed and content in this hot day under this cool shade, that he naturally fell into a state of absorption, a state of samadhis, which is called the deep states of absorption, and samadhi are called jhanas, where he just naturally falls into a jhana with the sense of ease. And you know, you got to kind of get a sense, right? He's not talking about, I remember I was a kid, I worked so hard, I reached the state of samadhi. No, that's not the sense you're getting, right? He's relaxed. He's been left to as a child, nothing to do. He's playing. He's just kind of resting under the cool shade of this tree, content, happy. Ah, samadhi arises. So he remembers this as he is sitting under the Bodhi tree the night of his enlightenment. He says, ah, maybe that is the path. That is the path, that ease, that joy, that contentment, relaxation is the path for samadhi, for one-pointedness to arise. That is the path, not the self-mortification, not the So that is really his insight. And that insight, you probably heard this story many, many times by different people, but that's really a stroke of insight, that it's really the samadhi arises from a sense of relaxation, ease, contentment. So one thing I often have suggested in various meditations is, you know, imagine you're sitting in a warm bath. Imagine you're sitting in a warm bath. In fact, as you're sitting here listening to me, adjust your body such that you can listen. And also imagine that you're sitting in a warm bath. How does that change the quality of your listening? How does that change the quality of your body? Sitting in a warm bath. How does your body feel in a warm bath? How do your muscles feel? Your jaw, your belly, your abdomen. Nowhere to go, nothing to do. Sitting in a warm bath. Sense of ease and relaxation. And I'll read from the Buddha. As he was sitting under the tree, the Bodhi tree, he recalls, I recalled once when my father, the Sakyan, was working, and I was sitting in the cool shade of a rose apple tree, then quite secluded from sensuality, secluded from unskillful mental qualities, I entered and remained in the first jhana, rapture and pleasure, born from seclusion, accompanied by direct thought and evaluation. Could that be the path to awakening? As you're sitting with your eyes closed, I'll introduce the other one, the other supporting factor, is receiving. Receiving, not doing, not going out and doing, but receiving. And as you're sitting, see the difference between reaching out, this wanting, it's like the movement of a fork reaching out to stab a broccoli. How does that feel in your body? Like reaching out with, doing versus receiving. The feeling of, for example, receiving my voice. Receiving the sounds in the room. A sense of receptivity, of receiving. Receiving. Not going out and trying to capture or hear the voice. Like, put it in a prison, in a cell. Like, okay, got it. I got the sound. But receiving. Receiving the sounds, receiving. How does a receptive attitude feel in your body together with relaxation? Just receiving the sensations. Of sound, sensations. Of your body sitting. The sensations. Of feeling the chair, or the cushion, or your hands. Receiving. It's a different stance, the receiving, being receptive. As if you're receiving with your whole body. You're receiving with your whole body. If you're breathing in to your whole body, receiving the breath as it moves in and out on its own. receiving. Receiving the breath, the movement, the air as it moves on its own throughout your body. Not making it happen, not going out to feel the breath, but just receiving what's already there. And you can receive it in your whole body, or your belly, or your chest, or nostrils, wherever is most comfortable for you. Maybe for now, keeping it diffuse, receiving the breath throughout your body, the whole body. Just as you're receiving, continuing to receive the breath, letting it move through the body. Allow yourself to enjoy, Take delight. Enjoying is the third support. Ajahn Suchito puts it this way. He says, I think of enjoyment as receiving joy. I think of enjoyment as receiving joy. And samadhi as the art of refined enjoyment. And samadhi as the art of refined enjoyment. It is the careful collecting of oneself to the joy of the present moment. It is the careful collecting of oneself to the joy of the present moment. Joyfulness means there is no fear, no tension, no ought to. Joyfulness means there is no fear, no tension, no ought to. There isn't anything we have to do about it. There isn't anything we have to do about it. So there is stillness. It's just this. It's just this. As you allow your body to be relaxed, as if you were sitting in a warm bath, receiving joy, receiving each breath, each in-breath, each out-breath. Throughout the body. No ought to, no shoulds. Receiving the joy of this present moment. Carefully collecting oneself in the joy of the present moment. Receiving, enjoying. The simplicity of this moment. The simplicity of this breath. enjoying the simplicity of this moment. Enjoying this breath. At some point, it's possible that the breath will feel so smooth. Perhaps or however it might be, smooth or jagged, however it might be, to fall in love, to fall in love with this breath, this in-breath, this out-breath. If there is any lack of ease in the body or mind, let that be your guide towards more ease, towards more relaxation, towards more enjoyment and more receiving. And know that there is a virtuous cycle of joy, happiness, increasing samadhi. And as samadhi increases, there is more joy, more delight, more enjoyment. In fact, the teaching of transcendent dependent origination. Joy leads to rapture. Rapture leads to tranquility. Tranquility leads to happiness, sukha. And happiness leads to samadhi. The virtuous cycle. It's not effort that leads to samadhi. It's joy, rapture, tranquility, and happiness leading to samadhi, delight. I'll share the fourth supporting factor, which is gentle, gentle persistence. So you're sitting, receiving joy. There's a sense of balanced, gentle non-effortful, non-striving, persistence. Atapi in Pali, gentle persistence. It's a light touch, it's gentle, and yet it's persistent. It's like a gentle stroking over and over and over and over again. Not heavy-handed. It's like tuning a bow. If your mind is wandering a lot, feeling too lax, put a little more emphasis on the persistence aspect of gentle persistence. If you feel a little too tight, anxious, then put more emphasis on the gentleness of the receiving. Gentle persistence. So, shared four of the eight so far, and I think it would be good to pause and first ask you if there are any questions or any reflections you'd like to share, and then I think it would be helpful for us to have a walking meditation period, both because samadhi can be so relaxing that we fall into sleepiness, so bringing some more energy as you walk could be helpful, but also the walking practice, practicing with what I've offered so far, I think will be really supportive for the rest of the day. Just like as you're walking, can you enjoy? Can you receive? Can you have gentle persistence? Can you be relaxed while you're walking? So I'm going to pause and see if there are any questions, clarifications, or any insights that might have arisen from the practice so far. Please.
Can you just review what the four of the eight were?
Sure. That's right. So the first one is relax. One is relax. Number two is receive. Receive. Number three is enjoy. And I like Ajahn Suchita's. He says, I think of enjoyment as receiving joy. So in a way it combines both two and three, because you're receiving joy. You're not kind of going out and creating it. You're just kind of receiving joy. So three is enjoy. And the fourth is gentle persistence. And to remind you, it's like a bow. If mind is wandering too much, put a little more emphasis on the persistence. Like, yeah. If the mind is getting too tight, more emphasis on the gentle. Notice I'm not using the word effort. I'm using the word gentle persistence instead. Do you see the difference? It could be subtle, but it's very important. Because talking about effort, even wise effort. People usually kind of forget the wise part. They just remember the effort. And by tightening, you can become concentrated through effort, but it's unsteady. It will fall apart. It's like a house of cards. I worked with so many retreatants on retreats where like, oh, I had it. It's like, but then this morning it's all gone. right? Because like, there's so much effort. You're like kind of constructing the jhanic factor. When you get tired, it's all gone. So with gentle persistence, you keep at it. While you're walking, as you're listening to me, you keep at it. You're still in the space. You stay in the space. You keep at it. It's persistent. Not a moment off, but it's very gentle. It's like touching a cotton ball with a feather ball, with a feather. That level of gentleness, but you keep doing it. You keep doing it all day. Persistence, okay? So those are the four. I'm going to invite you to experiment with them and really try them on for size, and try the opposite on for size, if that helps, while you're walking now for a walking period. Any other questions? Yes, please.
I guess it's more of a reflection.
So when you said the Buddha remembered his time under the apple tree, and so I think that sounds like a skillful means, like using the past to bring yourself into the present.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so the same way that, for example, when I tell you, I don't know if you how this works for you, but when I suggest, what does it feel like to sit in a warm bath? My body kind of like, it knows when I think I'm, okay, relax, Nikki, relax, Nikki, okay, I'm relaxing, I'm trying. Like remember when you were sitting in a warm bath? My body knows how to go there. Even if I don't. Whoever the I is, so whatever might be supportive for you. That's why I'm saying these factors, you know them. You've been there. Your body knows. So definitely skillful means. Anything else before we... Okay. All right. Great. So let's have a walking period of, let's come back at noon, at 12. So that would be 25 minutes walking period. And then, so remember while you're walking, the four things. The first one was? Relax. Great. Number two? Receive. Number three? Enjoy. Number four? Gentle persistence. Okay. Well, enjoy your gentle persistence in a relaxed way while you receive. There's got to be a mnemonic there somewhere. All right. See you at noon. Okay. So before we continue to the other four, factors supporting samadhi. Any reflections from your walking with the first four factors, or any questions that might have come up? Okay, all good so far. Or totally confusing so far, one way or the other. Okay, all right. Okay, so I will continue. So, the fifth supporting factor to really bring in is seclusion, renunciation of the mind. And that is really an active renunciation and letting go of other objects, other thoughts, everything that comes up, just an intention of renouncing them for the time you're practicing samadhi. And one way I usually suggest that is with the little motto, not now, not now. It's not that there's anything wrong with thinking in general. Thinking can be very helpful in our daily lives and how we live our lives. But while you're practicing, and also when you're practicing Vipassana, you're going to get to see your mind. You get to work with it. You get to see your thoughts. You get to see how they come up, you know, big or small, their patterns. You get to really recognize your thoughts. But for the purpose of practicing samadhi, you renounce them. Not to say there's anything wrong with them, but in order to really for your mind to feel settled, unified, put together, you renounce them. You renounce thoughts, you renounce other objects of the mind. So just one object. In fact, this might be a good time to bring up the difference between practicing Vipassana or mindfulness. Let me just stick with Vipassana. Mindfulness is a little overloaded. Vipassana, insight practice, versus samadhi practice. They're different practices. You do them differently. Even though samadhi is a huge support to Vipassana, huge support, but the intention, the way you practice them is a little different. And one good way that has been, that I heard Steve Armstrong say it years ago. I don't know where he heard it or he made it up. I think he heard it from his teacher. Is Vipassana is like serial monogamy. You are with one object, monogamy. You're with that object. You're observing your breath. Then you move on. You're observing your thoughts. You're really observing them. You're with them. Then you're moving on. You're observing the pain sensation that comes up. You're really with it. So it's serial. You're moving from object to object to object in Vipassana, right? But it's monogamous. You're not, you know, you're not wavering when you're staying with the sensations of pain or bodily sensations. You're like, oh, let me check out my breath here for a moment. Like, you're just staying with that, okay? So serial monogamy, Vipassana, compared to the way you can think of samadhi is absolute monogamy. You're just staying with one object, with your breath, or again, with any of the other 40 objects, the other 39 objects, you're staying with that object. You're not moving. Thoughts come up, thank you, not now. Sensations of pain come up, thank you, not now. You go back to the breath, okay? Emotions come up, thank you, not now. You go back to the breath. That's kind of the idea. Of course, there might be times that it is skillful, like the emotions become so strong that you just cannot stay with the breath. It's just like, oh, this is so hard. Then you need to switch to Vipassana to work with the emotions, or switch to metta or compassion practice to work with the emotions, what's coming up. When there is more stability in the mind, then you come back to samadhi, just staying with the object. Does that make sense? Is that clear? Any questions there? Okay. So going back to number five is seclusion, renunciation of the mind. So it's this act of seclusion of the mind, choosing, wanting the mind to be secluded. As I wrote in the Majjhima Nikaya, a tiny part of the sutta, when the Buddha was remembering sitting under the rose apple tree, where he said, ah, I was secluded, the mind was secluded. The mind was secluded and, excuse me, where he said that he remembered quite secluded from sensuality, secluded from unskillful mental qualities, etc., etc. So it's that idea of seclusion choosing, and it's not actually, and the relationship to seclusion is not, oh, I have to do this. It's actually, there's so much joy, so much delight in seclusion of the mind. It's like, ah, finally, all the distractions, all the phone calls and texts and messages and all this, what a relief. The mind can be secluded now and just kind of content. So really having that intention for the seclusion of the mind. Okay, I'm going to put you down. I'm going to put you down distractions. I'm going to put you down worries, thoughts. What am I going to eat for lunch? What did I have yesterday? This conversation I'm about to have with someone who's not easy. Just all of those, just seclusion of the mind. Ah, I'm going to take refuge. I'm going to give myself this gift of seclusion. So being very intentional about it. That's very important in developing samadhi. I'd really want to, I mean, all of these factors that I've experienced in my own practice and gathered here in eight are important. But seclusion and renunciation, usually, especially renunciation, gets a bad rap. Oh, renunciation, we have to give it up. No, it's a joy, it's a delight to renounce for the benefit for the benefit of something better, something more joyous, something more wonderful, more fulfilling. Number six is somewhat of a combination of a couple of different things. I have it in my notes as surrender/let go of the outcome/trust. And they relate to each other. Let me explain how they can be helpful in this practice. One is that you surrender, you let go of the outcome. Even though you are doing the practice of samadhi, but you're not going to check your watch every 5 minutes. Okay, am I there yet? Am I at the first base? Or have I any jhanic factors shown up? Or how relaxed? No. You let yourself go into the process. You let go of the outcome. I think the way this showed up for me, you know, when it really clicked years ago when I was on my first samadhi retreat, I realized that there was this very little tightness of kind of wanting to get concentrated, wanting samatha to arise, wanting the state of samadhi to arise. Samatha is the practice, samadhi is the state. To arise. And I realized, that little wanting the outcome was actually holding me back, was creating enough tension or tightness, even though it was so subtle, you know, the body was relaxed. But it was subtle enough that in a very counterintuitive, but actually rather intuitive way, it actually what holds back the progress. So what came up for me in my language, whether or not this works for you, I decided I'm just going to do the work. I'm just going to stay with this breath. I'm just going to stay with this in-breath, with this out-breath. I'm going to completely give myself to the breath. Just going to stay with it with no expectation. And if it finds me worthy, whatever it is, this is where language gets a little confused. If this practice finds me worthy, then samadhi will arise. So I'm just going to do the work. I'm just going to give myself to it. So because there's nothing I can do about the outcome, all we can do, all I can do, is to put the conditions in place. That's all. So I could do something about the conditions. I'm going to relax. I'm going to receive. I'm going to not expect an outcome. Have renunciation. And we'll see what happens. If it finds me worthy, it will arise. If not, that's okay. I'm just doing this practice without any expectations. And that's when it starts to really flow for me. So surrendering, letting go of the outcome. And also trusting. I think that's where the word trust really comes in. The sense of trust. That putting all of the structures in place, your mind and heart know how to do this. Whoever you is defined with the egoic aspect, you may not know how to do this, but there's something deep inside you that will know how to find the way. So there's a sense of trust. There's a sense of trust, which counters doubt. Can I do this? Is this right? Is this happening? So the trust really counters the sense of doubt. The seventh aspect is really, it's interesting, is really bringing a lot of curiosity and interest, which is, by the way, the second, right? This is the second factor of awakening, Dhamma Vichaya, that sense of curiosity. I found that can be incredibly supportive and helpful for this, for samadhi, for the samatha practice, state of samadhi arising. Because realize that, you know, with absolute monogamy, there are times that perhaps boredom can arise, right? It's like, okay, just this breath, just this in-breath, just this out-breath. And the way to work with that is with Dhamma Vichaya, with curiosity, interest. What is it about this breath? Can I experience this breath as if I'm a newborn? This is my very first breath. As if I'm a Martian. I've just been dropped into this body from Mars. And I'm experiencing the breath for the first time. I've done all of these practices and so many more. Just a matter of curiosity. And then you become more interested. And you remember with curiosity, after you have mindfulness and you have curiosity, what comes up? Energy comes up. Then you have more energy for it, more engagement. Then what comes up? Joy comes up. Great. So it's kind of like, you know, it can support the whole process. So curiosity. Be curious about the boredom. What does the boredom feel like? What is it like in the body? What's it like in the mind? So, 5, seclusion, renunciation of the mind. 6, surrender, letting go of outcome, trust. 7, curiosity, interest. 8, I've saved the best for last. So, the 8th is intention and attitude. Getting it attitude does not work. You want to get it. You want to get samadhi. You want to get the badge of samadhi, you know, first jhana, second jhana. Like, that does not work. It just doesn't. Again, as I mentioned, you can kind of like, kind of hold it together for a few hours or a day or two. And then it'll fall apart. So, the attitude that does work. I'm just to say a little bit more about the getting it attitude. It's kind of like with this work ethic of achievement. That, like, there's something to achieve, there's something to get. In that way, we lose the present moment appreciation because we're after this thing we want to get at the end, this badge, this goodie that's been famed to be supportive of our practice. We want to get that. So even just the tiniest movement of the mind, towards that reaching out, well, actually, we lose the present moment appreciation. And the only thing that makes samadhi work is the present moment appreciation of the object. That's what makes it build up. That's what makes it deepen. present moment appreciation of whatever the object is that is becoming the object of your samatha practice. Utejaniya, in his style, he offers a lot of questions to drop in. So, drawing from his way of teaching, what is the mind that is meditating? What is the mind that's meditating like? Is it a demanding mind? Is it a present moment mind? What is your intention? Is there a demanding, impatient attitude? Do you feel calm and easeful? And what's the energy in the attitudes that you have? And these can be very subtle. This can be really interesting practice, by the way. Because one thing I want to also emphasize is that with practicing samatha, the practice of samadhi, raising the right, I always confuse samatha and samadhi. Anyway, so practicing samatha, what is actually really amazing about this practice is not so much whether or not your mind gets settled more, whether or not your mind gets more stable. It's an amazing practice because you learn so much about yourself. You learn so much about your attitudes, about your mind, about your body, about your heart. It's an amazing practice, not just in getting the mind more calm to support the other factors and to support vipassana, but also because you get to see all these subtle attitudes that you have towards practice, towards yourself, towards the way you run. So it can be very profound. Another thing about intention is that I've also seen this, that when people really, so when some people have this intention of, oh, want to have, you know, samadhi rise, practicing samatha, okay, I'm practicing samatha, seclusion, okay, quiet, shut up, no sounds, you know, people become very, very brittle, very irritable, a lot more than practicing vipassana. Because if the attitude is such that I want to get this thing and you are a distraction to me, your breathing is a distraction to me because I'm going to get this thing, the mind gets very brittle. People get very antsy, anxious, and just kind of mean, right, towards the other people because they become obstacles. And that can be, again, really interesting study of our own mind and heart. Like, whoa, wait a minute. I've become a jerk, right? Wow, how did this happen? Wow. It's all arising from this attitude of wanting to get it. And it's so important, this driven attitude. So be open to all of these things that could happen along the path. It just allows you to get to know yourself more clearly. Like every time somebody sneezes, then it becomes like, oh, why are they sneezing? You know, can they go home? Or if somebody's walking late, oh, walking, I can't believe that. It's like, oh, just like receive, relax, come on. It's so, see if your mind is getting brittle when you're practicing. See if your mind is getting brittle and anxious and not very kind. Why is that? Why is that? Let your lack of ease, if there is lack of ease, let the lack of ease be the pointer in your mind to more ease. Let the lack of ease be a pointer to more ease in the mind. Okay. So, I want to emphasize again that the overall goal of this entire basket of practices is to to reduce, eliminate suffering, to have more freedom. And a lot can be learned in the process. So especially notice if your mind becomes displeased or frustrated or wants or fragile. Patiently work with all the patterns that come up. Really, that's where the juice is. That's where the meat of this practice is. That's where the, let's say, juice. That's where the juice of the practice really is. And whatever your level of samadhi, don't be disheartened. Don't be disheartened. It's a cultivation practice. And know that while you're practicing, you are developing the paramis of patience, renunciation, energy, and getting to know yourself much more deeply. All these patterns. It's a very rich practice. So, and I'd like to echo my Burmese teacher, who's a concentration master, Paul Oksayada, still living, very old. Wherever there would be challenges or difficulty, so I have to say a few words about my teacher. I have a lot of, you know, I'm not a devotional person, but I have a lot of love for Paul Oksayada. He's 84 now, and brilliant, smart. And I would also say that if he wasn't an accomplished monk, he would be a general somewhere. He's so, like, you know, you've heard of Upandita, like very, very devoted, extremely devoted to practice and devoted to my practice, to all the people that he teaches. And he's also filled with metta. He's really filled with metta. He's amazing. One of the other teachers, or the senior teachers in this tradition, Guy Armstrong, he said in his words that Paul Oksayada is the closest person he has met to what Buddha would have been like as a person who's really, like, in a way fierce, so like have a lot of confidence and really dedicated, just wants to talk about practice, and also lots of metta at the same time, like both of them coexisting. So, it just makes me happy to talk about him. So the times of difficulty in practice, I could really feel his compassion, I could really feel his metta, and he would say, "Don't worry, don't worry." I can't do a good Burmese accent, but it would just, "Don't worry, don't worry." It's like, "It's okay, it's okay." So I always remember that. I want to pass that on, like, now, whatever happens in the practice, don't worry, don't worry. There's a sense of feel that metta, feel that calm. It's okay. It's all about relieving suffering. So, don't worry, don't worry. So I'll review what I've shared with you. Started with number one was relax. Number two, receive. Number three, joy. Number four, gentle persistence. Number five, seclusion and renunciation of mind. Number six, surrender. That's a long one. Surrender, letting go of outcome, trust. Number seven, curiosity. Number eight, intention and attitude. Attitude is really, really key. Intention and attitude. So I think it's really important to really, as I mentioned, till the soil, have these in place. So what I'm hoping to do this afternoon is to give you the specific instructions of how to be with the breath. They're very, actually, progressive instructions. Like first you do this, then you do that, then like there, and we'll practice as much as we can this afternoon with the having placed these things in order, as you know, at least the parting the information about them, and So any questions before we break for lunch in a few minutes? Any reflections? Any complaints? Yes, please. And would you please grab a mic?
I guess it just throws me off a little bit that Samdhi is absolute monogamy.
Yeah.
Because I feel like sometimes it's better to move on.
Yeah.
I mean, if breath is the object of my focus, there might be something else that arises that I'm going to move over to that's better at that time. And I think that's a bit of a in between
Vipassana,
where it's just, you know, whatever arises, kind of go over and focus on that for a while. But, you know, for example, if I was focused on my breath and there was an external noise that was getting my attention, I would switch that to the noise as my object of concentration.
Right.
Rather than try and stick with my breath and ignore the noise.
Yeah. Great. I'm glad you are thrown off. This is great. Perfect. Appreciate the challenge. Great. So what you are describing, Daryl, is the practice of Vipassana. You are, to a T, describing that practice. You are with your breath. The sound comes. It's more prominent. You move to that. Great. That's Vipassana. The practice of Samatha is different. And I'm delighted for you because this is a whole new different practice which you haven't explored. And I will talk more this afternoon about the practice, the depths of this practice. In some ways, I sometimes hesitate about talking about the depths of this practice because it can give rise to a wanting mind, like, oh, that sounds so good, I want that. That sounds so awesome, the states of bliss that she's describing in this jhana. And that. So that's usually my hesitation, but I think it is worthwhile to also discuss, like, oh yeah, this, there are many, many fruits of this practice, not in and of themselves, not just to get be high as a kite on the blissful realms, which one can get, but to really use these for the purpose of Vipassana and for the purpose of liberation. And I think that's one danger, by the way, that tends to happen with Samatha practice, because it can be so joyous, so wonderful, blissful, that people just like hang out there. They never want to ever do Vipassana again. I've had people like that. Like, why would I want to do Vipassana? It's just like, this is so good. Like, please, these are the reasons why you want to use this as a, to support. So how's that for yeah, helpful? Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Any other ways you might be thrown off? Yay. Sure, please.
I'm not sure if it's exactly what you're asking for, but
anything is welcome.
Okay. Because I'm really interested in the Buddha under that tree, and I think and I think what it, you know, what I notice if I reflect on some time in my own life, you know, which I might have had something similar, you know, not exactly probably like the Buddha, but you know, but then I don't know. I just want to cry. I just feel like really my goodness, you know. Mm. And so I think that's a good thing. I'm just, mm-hmm. I think this is good, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. it's not really like mm-hmm. being in the present. Or it's bringing up present feeling, mm-hmm. but it's kind of right. from another experience. That's what I'm just saying. And so right. I think so. I'm yeah. just sharing that.
Yeah, got it. So what I'm hearing, perhaps you're not formulating it as a question, but here's a question that I could potentially see in it, which is, this is a past event, and in the practice we're encouraged to stay in the present. So how to resolve that?
No, I'm just saying it because the feeling that you have from the past yeah. is in the present.
Exactly.
So exactly. I'm not saying it's really feeling a conflict or something. Great. I'm just saying Great. That that's my experience.
Great. You know, yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. I'm delighted to hear that. And just to say a little word for benefit of everyone who might be experiencing something like this, just as the Buddha talks about and as you talk about, is really... as a skillful means, as you mentioned yourself, to bring the as the mind can use a memory from the past in the present moment to work more skillfully, which is very different from kind of being lost in the memory of the past, which is, you're not describing that, neither is the Buddha, like kind of being lost in the memory, oh, this happened, oh, that happened, oh, and I said this, and they said that, and like, how wonderful is that? Oh, it's, oh, darn it, those times are gone. Like, that is not skillful, of course, but I'm bringing that up as a caricaturist example, but what you are describing is like, oh, yeah, letting your heart in this moment be informed, like, oh, yeah, that goodness, like, ooh, okay. Beautiful, lovely. Yeah. Okay, so there are no further reflections or questions. It's 12:35. Let's come back at 1:35. And for lunch today, here are the suggestions I have. So you are welcome to speak if you wish, and yet today you may want to experiment with seclusion of the mind and silence and practicing with all the eight that I've given you, and just practicing with either your breath while you're eating or with the food while you're eating or the sun on your face, just choosing an object and working with that. So see what supports you best. Okay? All right. So see you at 1:35.